It's time now for Wellness Wednesday, a program featuring health professionals from our area medical facilities discussing a variety of topics concerning your well-being. Wellness Wednesday is a weekly feature on Q92 Radio.
Time for another Wellness Wednesday here on Q92. This morning we're going to travel over to CCM Health and we're going to visit with Courtney Nguyen. And Courtney is an RN and she is also a behavioral health addiction services coordinator. Good morning, Courtney.
Good morning.
That's kind of a long title there that you have.
It is. It was quite the mouthful for me to learn how to say at the beginning, but I think I have it down now.
Okay. We have a very important subject to talk about this morning, don't we?
We do, yes. It's a big passion of mine.
All right. Well, Courtney, tell me a little bit about the history of addiction and why is it important to treat?
So most of us have heard about the opioid epidemic, but a lot of people who are not directly involved in addiction in some way do not know a lot about the details of what it really is. So I'm just going to give you a general overview. There have been about four waves in the opioid epidemic as of today. There's a lot more details in this, but I'm just going to do a general overview. So the first wave ran about 1999 to 2010. The opioid epidemic started in 1990 or around 1990 with an increase in opioid prescription for non-cancer related pain and chronic pain, which had never really been done before. This created a greater opportunity for addiction. The biggest medications on the market during that time were oxycodone and hydrocodone, which you also may have heard of as OxyContin and Vicodin. OxyContin in particular was released by Purdue Pharma in 1995, was marketed as a less addictive and more mild form of an opioid. The first wave doubled the rate of opioid-related deaths in the United States from 1999 to 2010. The second wave that came was 2010 to 2013. What happened during this time was people were catching on to how addictive these medications actually were, and there was a big push from providers to make sure they were closely monitoring how they were prescribing these medications. Because of this, there was a rapid increase in heroin overdose deaths, and it's believed that it was in large effort because the providers were no longer prescribing opioids to just anyone. And that led to people who were already addicted to opioids turning to heroin on the streets because it was the only thing that was available to them. So from 2002 to 2013, the rates of overdose by heroin nearly quadrupled in the United States. During the third wave, it started around 2013 and is still currently happening. There was an increase in overall deaths from synthetic opioids. Particularly fentanyl is what we're seeing the most of, which is actually 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine. Mm. And then the fourth wave, which is still ongoing, is the combined use of cocaine, methamphetamine, and fentanyl. This really exacerbated around the time of COVID. During the pandemic, there were a lot of increase in opioid overdose deaths, and 80,411 overdose deaths in the United States in 2021 were because of fentanyl. And that was 75% of all of the overdose deaths. So it was very popular around that time.
Wow.
And still is today.
Courtney, when did CCM Health become involved in treating addiction?
CCM Health received a wonderful opportunity from the Towns Grant through the Minnesota Department of Health in 2018 to start a Suboxone program to treat opioid use disorder.
So what'd you say? Suboxone?
Suboxone, yep.
Okay, what's that?
It's a medication. Yep, it's a medication that's used to treat opioid disorder. It's part of a comprehensive medication-assisted treatment program, which is also known as a MAT program. Some people might hear that around. And Suboxone has two active ingredients. So the first ingredient that's in Suboxone is buprenorphine. That's a partial opioid agonist that binds to opioid receptors in the brain, reducing cravings and withdrawal symptoms without producing the same high as a full opioid. That is kind of the medical jargon that, you know, you would read in a book.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really the way that I typically like to explain it to patients. The way that I usually explain it to my patients is when you take an opioid and you become addicted to it, you have these receptors in your brain that are like a bunch of little cups in your brain. And what happens is these cups get filled with some sort of a substance like water, for example. And when all of these receptors in your brain get filled with water when you take an opioid, you get used to these receptors being filled to the top, and when you stop taking the opioid, they slowly diminish. All of the water goes away. And your body kind of thinks like, hey, where did that go? That was a really good feeling. I want that back. And that's where addiction sets in, where they need the medication more and more. So what Suboxone does is it helps you fill those receptors, but it's not with the same substance that an opioid would. So the analogy that I typically use is if you took a bag of graham crackers and crumbled them up and filled your cup with that instead of with water, it doesn't completely fill the cup. You know, there's still going to be little gaps where it's not filling, but it fills it enough to reduce the craving. But because it's not filled all the way, you're not going to get high from Suboxone. And then the other component of Suboxone that's really important is the naloxone. Naloxone, you may have heard, is Narcan, which is the same medication that we use to treat overdose. It's an opioid antagonist that helps prevent a high or overdose by blocking opioid effects if the medication is injected instead of taking as prescribed. So this is basically what prevents the Suboxone from allowing you to overdose on it or to get high. So Suboxone is typically taken in a film or a tablet that's dissolved under the tongue. And it allows individuals to stabilize their recovery journey long enough so that they can really focus on the reason for their addiction.
Okay. Courtney, how has the program evolved since 2018?
So last year, I mentioned that in 2018 we received a Towns grant, and last year we were fortunate enough to receive a second grant from the Towns program, which was really exciting for CCM Health. So we're utilizing this grant to continue to expand on our addiction services. And I came into this role during the second grant to an already established Suboxone clinic. So what we're doing with this grant is our goal is to increase the quantity of patients that we're seeing and then also expand the addictions that we are treating and improve the overall quality of care that our patients are receiving, because we get this opportunity from the grant to learn from other addiction programs all over the state and really all over the country to learn what things have been successful in their programs and implement that into our program. As I explained earlier, you know, the focus of addiction has changed so much throughout the years, and it's continuously evolving, which means the focus of recovery must purposefully change as well and continue to evolve. And we now understand that addiction is a complex medical condition rather than, you know, just a lack of willpower like many people think. It's influenced by so many factors, such as genetics, trauma, untreated mental health conditions, such as anxiety, ADHD, PTSD, and so many other factors. We're utilizing the opportunity of this grant to learn from other addiction experts who have been treating other forms of addiction, such as methamphetamine, alcohol, and fentanyl, that have become so prominent in our community in order to grow and develop our program into what our community needs.
So what's your role in this program then, Courtney?
Yeah, so I am a registered nurse, and I am a behavioral health and addiction services coordinator. So as you can see, I've practiced that a lot because it is a mouthful.
Yep.
I coordinate care for our patients in our addiction program, as well as our behavioral health program. So when a patient joins our program, they'll have a screening call done by one of our care coordinators, which is typically me, to get a little bit of history behind their addiction. The care coordinator typically will schedule the patient with one of our providers to be evaluated for medication-assisted treatment.
So it's my understanding that some addiction programs do not utilize medications. Why does CCM Health choose this route?
Yep, that's a very good question and something that I get a lot. The way that I look at it is when someone is struggling with addiction, stopping substance use is an incredibly difficult first step. When you're in addiction, the body becomes physically dependent, leading to withdrawal symptoms that can be so painful and overwhelming for the patient. Beyond the physical aspect, there's an emotional and psychological challenges that can be just as difficult as the physical changes. The feelings that may have initially led to substance abuse, such as anxiety, trauma, or depression, they begin to resurface when you stop using the drug or the alcohol. On top of that, people often come up to the point where they have to face any consequences that may have accumulated during the time of their addiction. You know, sometimes that's strained relationships, sometimes that's financial struggles, legal issues, but honestly, typically it's all of the above and so much more. It's been described to me like it's like waking up from running away from a life they felt the need to run away from, and that's why they started using. And then they get back, and they want to get back to their life, and everything was made so much worse from their addiction. This combination of the physical withdrawal and emotional distress and life challenges makes early recovery one of the most vulnerable stages, and that's why having strong medical and emotional support is such a critical thing during this time of their recovery. The reason that we like to utilize medications is to give patients the opportunity to restrain from use of substances long enough so that they can really take a deeper look into themselves and help find the why behind their addiction. And honestly, that is the other part of my job that I enjoy so much. You know, if a patient came into our ER with difficulty breathing, they wouldn't just start treatment right away. They would take time to assess the patient, find the cause. You know, is the airway obstructed? Did they swallow something that got, you know, caught in their throat? Is there an allergic reaction that's causing swelling so that they can't breathe? Is there trauma to the chest? Is there a blood clot? There are so many things that could be causing this patient to have difficulty breathing. If the doctor doesn't figure out the cause, the patient's breathing will not be improved long term. It's the same thing with addiction. I believe strong supportive relationships with our patients is what's going to help them navigate the recovery journey. What I do in my role is I focus on creating a safe, trusting environment where they feel heard and supported every step of the way. You know, everyone in addiction has some sort of underlying reason why their addiction started. For some people, like I said, it's trauma, undiagnosed ADHD, depression, anxiety, you know, a previous injury that caused dependence, like the opioid epidemic. And I work with patients to create a care plan, set regular attainable goals to promote long-term recovery. So as a large part of these care plans, I work closely with our behavioral health team to manage the mental health of the patients in the addiction services program. That way we can treat any underlying causes while they're on the medication that's helping the cravings so that they can promote long-term recovery.
Who makes up the addiction services program, Courtney?
So we have three providers, two registered nurses who are the care coordinators, and one peer recovery specialist. Our provider group is made up of Dr. Novotny, Dr. Templewood, and Marcy Schmiesing. For our RN care coordinators, we have Autumn and myself. And then we also have a peer recovery specialist named Sarah. So our team works closely together to make sure that we have the best continuity of care for our patients.
You mentioned a peer recovery specialist. What's that?
Yeah, so I'm really glad that Sarah got brought up because our team is so lucky to have her. A peer recovery specialist is someone who has lived experience with some sort of a use disorder and has successfully navigated their own recovery journey, and it is becoming such a big part of the recovery world that is so essential to success. They're trained professionals who use their personal experience to offer support, encouragement, and guidance to others who are in the process of recovery.
So what can patients expect during their initial appointment?
At the initial appointment, we start with lab work to get a clear medical history. This kind of helps us understand where the patient is in their recovery and what medications will be safe to prescribe. So every appointment will include a urine drug screen. And, you know, I always stress to our patients that this is not a way to punish or catch anyone in a lie. But we always want to ensure the safety while prescribing medication. But we also want to foster an open, honest conversation about recovery. You know, we really believe that we need to meet people where they're at and offer harm reduction. We understand that relapse can be a part of the journey. We hope that it doesn't happen, but if it does happen, we look at it as a sign that we really need to adjust our approach to be better support for long-term success. After the initial lab work, the patient will meet with a care coordinator to explore their history and underlying reasons behind their addiction. As I mentioned, really finding the why behind their addiction together. And then together, we'll create a care plan that the patient and care team mutually agree upon. The provider will assess if medication-assisted treatment is appropriate, so the MAT program. If it is, the provider will send the appropriate medication to the pharmacy for the patient to take it home. And then the next part of our program is follow-up. It's really a key part to the success in our program. So depending on where the patient is at in their recovery journey when they come to us, they might have weekly appointments at first, sometimes even more frequent, and then can become less frequent as they gain stability in their recovery. in between visits, me or another care coordinator, depending on who you're set up with, will check in with follow-up calls or offer additional support. Sometimes that's coordinating inpatient treatment, outpatient treatment, connecting with peer recovery resources, assisting with housing or financial aid, or working on personal goals. Our goal is to make sure that we are providing compassionate, supportive environment where patients feel empowered in their recovery journey.
What other things are you working on for the CCML, the Addiction Services Program?
One of the main goals that we have for our program with this new grant is to significantly expand our reach to patients in need. And honestly, this grant has given us so many wonderful opportunities to do just that. We're actively speaking at and educating other facilities throughout our region in order to raise awareness about our services, especially since finding addiction support in rural areas can be so challenging. And to ask someone in recovery to travel to another town to receive services is, you know, a very difficult thing to ask someone to do when they're going through all of the challenges I described earlier. Another key thing that we're trying to do with this grant is to strengthen our partnerships with local jails. And I'm so excited to share that Chippewa County and Lacaparo were the first to agree to utilize our addiction services. The vision behind this initiative is to begin the recovery process while individuals are still incarcerated. So by enrolling them in our addiction services program during their time in jail, we can help lay the groundwork for a long-term recovery, with the ultimate goal being to ensure that individuals are able to continue their recovery journey upon release, hopefully improving their chances for sustained success and kind of reintegration into the community when they're released and to have that support set up for them. If there's anything that I can do during my time in this role, it would be to reduce the stigma around addiction. See, for me, reducing the stigma around addiction is so important because I've seen firsthand how much it holds people back from getting the help they truly need, which is such a difficult thing to watch because if someone had cancer, if someone had diabetes, they wouldn't be afraid to go to the doctor. But because of the stigma around addiction, that's what I see in patients, is they're ashamed and they're afraid to seek help. And I've worked with so many individuals who struggle with addiction, and I can say I genuinely enjoy every single one of my patients. So often they carry this heavy sense of shame and fear and judgment, and it's so heartbreaking to see because I know so much more healing and recovery is possible when people are just given the support and understanding that they deserve. Like I said, addiction is a complex health issue. It is not a moral feeling, and I truly believe that when we remove the stigma, we create a safer place for people to open up and get the help that they truly need. And I want to be a part of a movement that challenges these misconceptions and helps shift the conversation to something of compassion and support. And reducing stigma is about humanizing the experience that these people are going through, to make sure that no one feels isolated and ashamed for seeking recovery, and making sure it's about making sure that everyone knows they deserve a chance at healing and treating their disease, essentially. Ultimately, I think that reducing the stigma that there is around addiction and behavioral health, it will lead to better recovery outcomes for people, which will lead to stronger communities for our children to grow up in, which I think everyone can get on board with.
Yeah, that's very well said, Courtney. If someone is interested in the addiction services at CCM Health, how do they join?
Patients can call me directly at 320-321-8423, which also has a private voicemail for messages, so please feel free to leave a detailed message if I don't answer. They can also call the main CCM Health line, which is 320-269-8877. But of course, if you're in a place where you're experiencing a crisis or a medical emergency, it's really important that you seek immediate help. So make sure that instead of calling either of those numbers, that you call 911 or just go to the nearest emergency room.
Okay, Courtney, thank you so much. That was a wealth of information, good information there. And thank you for all you do and your team does at CCM Health. We appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak to people about addiction.
Yeah. Courtney, I usually ask people that we have on Wellness Wednesday, what do you like about working at CCM Health?
I've worked in a few different roles at CCM Health, and what I have seen as a consistent part of working here is my ability to really grow in my role and use the ability to grow to really help the patients and help the community.
Okay, good. And you're making a difference in people's lives too, I bet, huh?
Yes, yes. That's a very rewarding factor of this job.
All right. Thank you, Courtney, for joining us on Wellness Wednesday this morning.
Thank you.
That's Courtney Nguyen, an RN and Behavioral Health Addiction Services Coordinator at CCM Health. And this has been another Wellness Wednesday here on Q92.
Join us every week at this time for Wellness Wednesday on Q92. Find out what's happening at our area medical facilities, get to know the people who work there, and pick up some tips on how you can live a healthier life.